The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Protecting unborn life is one of the most important, maybe the most important political issue that we face as a culture, as a people, because lives are literally at stake.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's what this is all about, isn't it? This is the issue of our day. Maybe from the time you were born, or at least most of your life, right? Children have been vulnerable. It's the preeminent issue of our day. It's a battle on Capitol Hill. Satanists are trying to get a legal right to it. They're trying to use the courts. It's what the Sears and Fatima and what everybody else have warned us. You know, the final confrontation. Satan is going to attack family. He's going to attack marriage. As a result, life is in the crosshairs. So all we can do is pray. I'm not discouraged. You know, we're going to win. Communism fell, right? The Iron Curtain fell. Every mighty empire that ever rose has fallen. And evil can never, ever stand. It consumes itself in the end. And good always conquers it. So let's do our part. We'll pray. We'll be people of light. We'll trust in God's mercy. We'll pray for conversion. And we'll see some good things. I am absolutely convinced of that. That audio you just heard, by the way, was South Dakota Representative John Hanson talking about the battle for life being one of the most political, the most important political battles of our time. And I'll just say this to you, and I'll say it ad nauseum, okay? Because I really believe it. When you go to vote, when you evaluate candidates, where do they stand on the life issue? And I hope life is the top of your ticket when it comes to the issues that follow. I don't care it's got to be the economy, it's got to be healthcare, it's got to be Social Security, it's got to be unions, it's got to be life. You got to do what is moral, what is right. At least for me, that's the way I often look at the ticket. And if you have two pro-death candidates, there's other ways of looking. If you have two pro-life candidates, there's other ways of evaluating the candidate. But that's a conversation for another day. Speaking of life, Reuters is reporting that pro-life groups, which are now termed anti-abortion, right? You know the way they use words again. That's another one of those co-optings of words. You're anti-abortion. You're not pro-life, right? Well, what Reuters is reporting is that they're pushing Republicans who plan to run in the 2024 election to support a national ban on abortion. Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea? In the midterms, I was really wrong on it. I thought economy was the way to go. Apparently, a lot of people were beating Roe got overturned, you know, and the culture of death showed up and they voted in mass number. And guess what? Look where we are right now. I think we were weak. I think more candidates have got to say, I'm a person of life. I'm going to champion and protect life, period. That's first and most important for me. And here's where I stand on the other issues, right? I'm for it. I want to tip my hat. I think Representative Hanson is on the money. I think we should push for life in this country. Marilyn Musgrave, she's with the Susan B. Anthony list. She said, I forget where she was said this. It's some paper or somewhere I read this. She says, look, we got to make it clear that it's not just strictly the states that decide on this. We need leadership right now. Clearly, there is a federal role. What we need is a national minimum standard. I like that. Let's get some standards. You know, let's do this. Our former president, Donald Trump, is blaming Republicans and their stand on abortion for their disappointing performance in last year's midterms. I don't know if you agree with him or disagree with him. What do you think? You know, that's not how pro-life leaders see it. Those who were firm in their stance on protecting life, guess what? Those guys actually did well. Those who waffled? Sorry, guys. Bye-bye. Right? Oh, you know, I don't know. You got to be a person of conviction. I think that resonates. I've said that so often when it comes to this issue. Okay, you might get voted out for it, but you did what was right. You stood by your morals. I think there's more pro-life people than you imagine in this country. You know, evil seems bigger than it often is. I think if you stood for life, you might be surprised at what happens. So let's hope we get candidates from all parties who are willing to stand up and for the right to life. The midterms are over. We're going to be in the generals before you know it, and things are going to ramp up. The Pentagon, I want to talk to you about them for just a moment. They announced that somewhere between 90 and 100 Ukrainian army troops are going to be arriving in the U.S. to start training with our Patriot missile defense system. It's very sophisticated. It takes a lot of know-how. In fact, it takes months of training. They They need this in their battle with Vladimir Putin. But the Russian president may not, I don't think he's going to take kindly to it. He's not going to be very happy about the U.S. bringing Ukrainian soldiers onto our soil to be trained in this system. So let's pray he doesn't do anything rash. I mean, we are really ramping up our involvement in this particular conflict. But here's a little bit more. This comes from News Nation. They'll fill you in on these Ukrainian troops and what's hopefully going to be accomplished. Listen.
Those troops are going to be flown from Ukraine for the very first time here onto American soil to Fort Sill in Oklahoma to be trained on the Patriot missile systems. Now, it was actually during President Zelensky's historic trip to this building and to the White House last month when we first heard that President Biden was going to be authorizing these Patriot missile systems going to Ukraine at all. I want to play a little bit of what President Zelensky said at the time when it came to why he felt it was necessary and why it was going to help the Ukrainians on the battlefield.
This is a very important step to create a secure airspace for Ukraine, and that's the only way we would be able to deprive the terrorist country and their terror attack to strike our energy sector, our people, and our infrastructure.
So Pentagon officials confirmed Ukrainian troops could be on American soil as early as next week. They said that it would take a few months for these missile systems to become fully operational in Ukraine. Brigadier General Pat Ryder says the training is going to start with around 90 to 100 Ukrainians coming to the U.S.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. And again, I ask you to pray for peace. I pray for Ukraine and Russia every day. I pray for peace in the world. I pray for Xi Jinping and for China, for our world leaders, for our president. I pray. I mean, that's what we have to do. And look, I really believe prayer makes a difference. It was I was praying my rosary the other day, and I was really meditating in particular on the world and on the global conflict. And I almost feel like God hears your prayers. I mean, he's moved by the particular prayer. Prayer changes things. The rosaries, I really believe, help end communism. It's a powerful prayer to pray. The chaplet, you know, is such a powerful prayer against evil. The president, under him, of course, it was Trump who slashed federal regulations. You know, he slashed them and burned them. Under President Biden, they're being reimposed. One possible regulation that got aired recently, this one, I don't think it's going to see the light of day. I heard about this yesterday. Today, I think the administration is walking this back. There was a consumer for the Consumer Product Safety Commission who said that gas stoves are dangerous in homes. Now, I don't know whether you cook on electric or you cook on gas, right? They say gas stoves should be regulated. Being regulated, they mean banned, right? They want you to ban. They wanted to ban gas stoves. Look, it did not go over well with a lot of people. And apparently there was been a tremendous amount of pushback on this one issue, right? So much that the chairman, Alexander Honsarek, he basically released a statement earlier today saying, to be clear, I'm not looking to ban gas stoves. And the CPSC has no proceeding to do it. Who knows? They might do some sort of backdoor stuff. But right now, they're not going to do that. But this was a national story. Got a lot of attention yesterday. And all part of that agenda to go clean. But, you know, electricity is expensive. I don't know how much you pay for yours, but electricity is expensive. So you're going to have, you know, your electric stove, you're going to have your electric car, you're going to have all these things demanding your electricity. Maggie and I were talking about it. Maggie says, yeah, they do this in the name of the poor, right? Those who have gas stoves right now, what are you going to do? I'm sure maybe when it breaks, you go out, or will there be a timeline where you'd have to replace them? I mean, who knows? I don't think it'll ever come to be. See, this is the power of the collective coming together and saying, hey, this is crazy. Enough's enough. The Biden administration, one other story with Joe Biden I wanted to follow up on. This is student loans, and I've been following this story for a long time. You know, there was this push to forgive student loans. Apparently, they're planning now to partially forgive student loans. And that's going to be heard a little bit later in the Supreme Court in the spring. But just in case the justices don't rule in favor of forgiving the loans outright, the administration has this alternative. I saw a story this morning in the Washington Journal. They're reporting that they're proposing to cap monthly payments. So if you're paying back your student loan right now, they want to cap it so you're not over your head in student loan debt at 5%. They want a 5% of your discretionary income, which they want to define as 225% of the poverty line. So anyone who earns less than $31,000, guess what? You won't have to make a payment. And repayment will last almost 20 years. And, you know, time spent on unemployment, if you're out of work, it'll still be counted, by the way, for those 20 years. So somehow or other, it still sounds like something Congress, should decide, not the administration or anyone other. But we'll see how it works out. I know a lot of you have student loans. I work with somebody here who's had student loans for forever, and he doesn't agree with it, but he says, I'd still like to see it, I mean, there's the objective truth about this, and then there's the benefit. It does benefit certain people. But hey, the Pentagon has finally rescinded its vaccine mandate for members of the military, and that only came through because of an act of Congress. And I don't know if you followed any of this news or not. Here's the latest. This comes from Fox.
Just within the last few hours, we're learning new details as the Pentagon has decided to ditch the COVID-19 vaccination mandate. This coming in from the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin in a memo. And I will put it on our screen right now as they have dropped this, ditched this, rescinded this COVID-19 vaccination mandate. And it gives commanders some discretion in how or whether to deploy troops who are not vaccinated. Austin's memo, as you can see here from our associates there, has been widely anticipated ever since legislation signed into law on December 23rd gave him 30 days to rescind that mandate. The Defense Department had already stopped all related personnel actions, such as discharging troops who refused the shot.
So it's a really fascinating development. What I had read is that they will remove any penalties or reprimands from records of current service members who were punished. Some guys are punished over their vaccine stance or their status, right? And of course, as you just heard in the commentary there, no one's going to be discharged over the vaccine moving forward. However, and here's the thing I don't understand. They're not going to reinstate anybody who is discharged. They're just not going to reinstate you. Some of these, look, we've had Navy SEALs. We've had a lot of really highly trained and heavily invested in personnel they're not going to reinstate. The military, unfortunately, is going woke. In just a moment, I'll speak to a former member of Air Force. Captain Matt Dunbar is going to be joining me here, and we'll get his take maybe on this, but I want to talk to him about the FAA because he's been a pilot for years. It's unfortunate. We'll see what happens. One final story just on the president, right? I don't know if you heard about the classified documents being found at the president's think tank he used as an office after he left as vice president. Now NBC is reporting that some more confidential documents have been found at another location. This was news I just heard about. What's not clear right now is where those documents were found, how many there were, what level of classification they were at when they were found. We'll see how this unfolds. This is probably really good for the former president, for President Trump, the fact that Biden's now in trouble. But I'm telling you right now, you're not going to see the FBI raid the Biden residency or going through, Joe Biden's stuff like they did Melania's. Senator Josh Hawley, Hawley, though, did tweet out special counsel is what he said. But we'll see. We'll continue to follow the story. The world of politics is fascinating. Earlier this morning when I was getting up ready for the show, I had seen a news report about this FAA computer glitch. And I want to talk to you about that because, over the Christmas holiday, and I hope you didn't get caught up in this. What a mess that was, right? Oh, my gosh. Southwest Air, my heart goes out to you. It's terrible. They ran into this huge scheduling debacle. Thousands of flights were delayed. A lot of them were canceled. People were renting cars. Others waiting days, even weeks to get to their destination. One of my producers here, a guy named Patrick Alog, his parents came to visit. They came in relevant, and they happened to be caught up in that flight. They were heading back home, and they spent a lot longer in Chicago than they were planning because of that. And one of my producers, my other producer, Tom, his daughter came to visit him, and she spent a lot of extra days with the family because she couldn't get home. But unfortunately, they both flew Southwest at that time. They're working to get things right, and they're they did their mea culpa. We'll see what happens. But then this morning, like I said, I was getting ready and, okay, that happens. It's an anomaly, let's say. Who knows, right? Well, when I saw that airlines were being canceled again, that the computer systems were down, that there was a glitch in the computer system that every airline and the one that the government used to pass on information about obstructions on land or in air, there's a problem. I said to my wife, that's a hack job. It's probably Russia. You know, it could be Russia, could be any of our enemies. There's a lot of them out there, but I'm sure Russia, as I said a little bit earlier, they're not happy about our support, right? They're not happy about what we're doing right now. So why not attack us? So this is all run by the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and they started having problems yesterday. They shut down completely early this morning. More than 7,000 flights have been canceled. Airlines immediately offered passengers the opportunity to change their flights without being charged. Of course, not much comfort when no air traffic was allowed to operate at all, and the problem got solved pretty quickly around mid-morning, and then air traffic started slowly getting off the ground. But it's going to take a couple days to clear this up again. I've reached out to a good friend, Matt Dunbar. He's a retired senior flight instructor for an international airline. He was a commercial pilot for years, served in our U.S. military as well. Just to give us a sense for what unfolded today, because it's still somewhat of a mystery. Hey, Captain, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, how are you?
I am well. It's so good to hear from you. I had the great privilege of traveling with Matt not too long ago. We went to Ireland together. It's good to talk with you, though. It's good to have you here. I thought of you this morning because I know you flew for commercial airlines. Tell us a little bit about the system that went down. What's it do? How central is it? How safe? How important is it to the operations of commercial airlines?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll give a little history background because I'm traveling with another Air Force friend, former Air Force friend. We were classmates and teammates on a lacrosse team, and we're headed down to Florida to play in a tournament. But we were talking about that. We remembered when we were first learning how to fly that we used to call it notice to airmen. Now it's called notice to air mission.
Yeah,
and
change it.
That's right. The only thing that we'd end up doing is you'd look on a bulletin board. There'd be a telex piece of paper, and you just kind of look at to see what might be affecting the airport as far as taxiways, runways, VORs. In other words, just essential things about flying in the local area, and then anything that might impact your route of flight to wherever you're going to. In other words, if they've closed off a certain airway that might impact you, or they're having they're closed down a certain amount of air areas where military airplanes might be doing some air work, or, you know, for a variety of reasons. So it went from really that to, and anytime you traveled, you'd call the FAA on the phone and get the latest NOTAMs, as we would call it. And then as it's traversed these last, it's been modernized quite a bit. It used to be when we flew, and I flew primarily overseas, we would get NOTAMs for our entire route of flight, say from Minneapolis to Japan or to London, Frankfurt, whatever, and also the possible airfields we could be diverting to and the airfield we are landing at. Mm. So, and from there, just these last couple of years, all the airlines, the pilots, have been given computers, essentially iPads or whatever the platform that the airlines wanted their pilots to have, and it's all via the internet now.
Yeah.
So essentially it gives pilots critical information. But I, you know, talking to some other pilots about this, you know, we found out last night they had the problem, the glitch with the NOTAMs at, I think it was 8:30 or 8:28, however you want. And then nothing was, you know, obviously they probably tried to reboot the system. The thought is it was an IT problem. This is an older system. I don't know if people heard, but the NOTAM system from the military was not affected. It's two separate systems. My guess is the military system is much more current as far as technology. It's no surprise the FAA and with updates with the program, we've been dealing with this for quite some time as far as radar and the rest. Is old and it needs to be updated. And there's not, as far as Congress goes, there's not a steady stream of money to continue to upgrade different parts of the FAA radar, and this notice to air missions technology. So that's kind of the background. That's where we're at. Is it dangerous? You know, they canceled, to be honest with you, I think they canceled all these flights and delayed everybody to err on the extreme side of safety. Mm-hmm. Because we could, you know, you can take off VFR. The things that I'm thinking about, if an airport has taxiways that are closed, you know, the ground and tower are not going to send you on those taxiways. The difference would be if you were a heavy airplane and it was not weight, you're weight restricted from that, that could cause some problems. But I think it was just out of ease, the FAA to say, okay, right, everyone's canceled till we see what's going on.
You know, how vulnerable are we to hacking? You know, I often wonder, boy, if you could shut down the U.S., you know, air system, that'd be pretty amazing. Are the government, are the computer systems the federal government uses for the aviation system the best they are? Is the technology dated now? Does it need an update? How vulnerable are we perhaps to adversaries?
Well, my best guess is they're dated. Yeah. Just because of what we've had to deal with, and you brought it up. I mean, you know, even the airlines have been trying to update their systems. You just talked about Southwest, American Airlines with their Sabre. Delta had a problem. There was a big fire in their computer area. So, you know, they updated a lot of their systems. I think later on you're going to have a computer expert talking to you about something else. But I was talking to him. As a matter of fact, it's my friend Brian. He's an expert in this field. He said, sure, anything's susceptible to being hacked. It's not impossible. He was telling me, we were discussing it on our drive, that normally some kind of attack like this happens in the evening or at night. And he referred to the guys who do the first attack as the B team. And then later in early morning hours, the A team comes in to see what they can actually get done.
Wow.
So I thought that was extremely interesting. But, you know, the interesting thing was the military's was not affected, and it was the NOTAMs. Now the question is, was the NOTAMs, if you're going to talk about a cyber attack, was the NOTAM system, was that what caught this maybe a little bit of a ping and put them offline, or is it truly just an IT issue? With the age of it, maybe.
It's interesting. You know, like all things, I think competition is always good, right? There's been calls from conservatives right now to get the government out of the air traffic control business, allow private firms to take it over. As a person who flew for years, I don't know whether that's a good idea or not. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I heard people talk about that when we were driving, and I was truly trying to think through that, and I'm not with all the information and how a private firm would kind of come in and take over. I'd kind of be a little, I don't think at right now, just talking to you, I'd say I would not be in favor of that. No. However, that said, I don't have all the facts. I would, you know, that's something that we would really have to kind of take a look at, because like you said, I mean, there's a lot of radar involved, you know, with the U.S., flights going over, flights coming in. There's a lot of different things that we're talking about here, and allowing a private sector to come in and do that. That puts a lot of power into one company. And then the question is, as you know, the government doesn't normally like that. So now we have, say, 10, 15 different companies running our radar. I don't know if I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's interesting. Well, I was wondering what you thought about Southwest when that went down. That was pretty crazy, huh?
and it just reminded me of Delta with their, I mean, not Delta, American with American, their Sabre. Yeah. And then Delta had that it was a glitch. I think it took the weekend, you know, the air crew's going to get their flight plans, the passengers, same thing as American, same thing as Southwest. Yeah. They just couldn't get through the difference.
Well, flying is the safest form of travel, right, Matt? I think how many planes are in the air at any one time? Yeah, a lot of people are opting to drive right now because it's such an ordeal just to get through security, be crammed into a seat, and possibly get delayed. You know, I wish there was some way to fine tune that. I wish there was a better way of making it happen.
Well, you know, right now, Drew, and here's the thing. Remember, everyone's forgetting, you know, 9/11, they took away a lot of seats, right? We have COVID, and they take away another, 15, 20% of the seats. So we go from, well, you know, before COVID, you know, the planes started to ease up. Everything's going, you know, prices weren't too bad.
Right.
We have COVID and everything's shut down and we open back up because they don't have the flight crews because of the, you know, they had let go of a lot of the flight crews.
Yeah, right.
To get rid of them, download their you know, the budget for pilot and flight attendants right. pay. But then also you had the change from, and it's a perfect storm, right? We go from 60 to 65 on retirement. That's about the same time, you know, many of us started retiring. You know, we're from the end of the Vietnam era, so we're on our way out. So suddenly they have to download again the amount of airplanes. So you're right. I mean, I'm right with you when it comes to the airplanes are packed.
Yeah,
they're absolutely packed.
There's a pilot shortage now too, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't say major. I mean, they're looking for pilots. I mean, there's the big thing is the airlines are starting to work with the colleges, especially the aeronautical colleges that produce pilots, to get them into their programs. Of course, they're always looking for military pilots. You know, to me, the training is phenomenal.
Good career.
But yes,
it's a good career. Hey, Captain Dunbar, thank you for being here. Great to have you with me today. Always a delight and appreciate your expertise. We'll catch up again soon, okay?
Okay, Drew. Take care.
Safe travels. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Great guy. He loves whiskey. Didn't drink when he flew. I was with him in Ireland now. Introduced me to some really good Irish whiskey. And he's a lot of fun. My gratitude to Captain Dunbar for being here. Hey, when I come back, speaking of some changes, the Biden administration signed a law putting kill switches into cars. Wait to hear this one.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. If you missed any of the conversation, don't forget our podcast. You can find us at Spotify, Apple, relevantradio.com. Just do a quick search of the name, and you can share that conversation with someone else. You might say, oh, I tuned in late. I wish I could hear the rest of it. It is a great way to get connected. And I'm always trying to give you a look at not only the biggest and most important issues of the day, but what's coming, you know, and some weird stuff. I saw a story this morning. It was just on my radar. I was just going to pass along, but I thought, you know, it might deserve a little more conversation. The whole idea of, let's say, a kill switch in an automobile. What do you think of that, right? I see the merits of it. And I also see the real problems with it. So, you know, this whole idea of transportation, we just talked about flying, right? Whether it's getting on a plane, getting in a car, being able to go anywhere you want. For a lot of people, having a car, I don't know, it means freedom, right? I love being able to get behind the car of your wheel and drive where you need to go. I remember as a teenager getting my license for the first time, man, you couldn't drive enough, right? And when cars were first invented, you know, and all throughout the rest of the century, the car on the open road was really kind of almost a symbol of freedom. But what happens if the government can take that freedom away from you? Right? Again, I'm not a conspiracist, but I want us to talk, at least think this through. Government can already do that. You know, of course, if you're caught, you know, driving drunk or you're impaired or some way, right? You don't want to use your vehicle in any other way. That's not what I'm talking about. I stumbled across a new law that the president signed, President Biden signed last year, and it funds all kinds of infrastructure programs. But in the law was a provision, and this is what happens. They have these big picture types of spending that they want to do, and they funnel in these little provisions. This one requires car manufacturers to put what are being described as kill switches into your car starting 2026. So you're safe right now, right? But eventually your car is going to die. You're going to need another vehicle. You know, whether it's new or used, you'll end up with a car probably with a kill switch in it. Now, this is a passive monitoring system. So what does that mean? It detects whether or not a driver is, you know, might be operating in an impaired state. And you're thinking, oh, that's great. That's a good idea. And I agree. You don't want anybody driving under the influence of anything, right? Well, how does it do that? You know, if the driver's impaired, the system can then limit and stop the vehicle from being driven. Maybe you're driving erratically, crossing lines. Maybe, you know, your speed is erratic. it might sound great. Again, no, that's good. Let's keep high drivers or drunk drivers off the road. But there are a number of other issues to work out here, including constitutional ones. There's no definition of what impaired means in the law. So if you happen to get drowsy when you're driving, right, does that mean that you're impaired? Imagine, you know, you're kind of dozing off a little bit and all of a sudden you tap the line. Will your vehicle be stopped because of that? But here's the other thing. This is also a passive monitoring system, which is computerized, which means that people can get your data. I was saying to Maggie, what if somebody hacks the code in her car and he says, oh, here's a very attractive woman. You know what? She's driving home late from the studio after having done her last shift. She's down some desolate road and he shuts her car off. Click. Oh, well, I noticed your car stopped. Are you in trouble, ma'am? Could I help you? And as she rolls down the window, who knows, right? And it's a horrible scenario. I'm just saying these things, there's always danger somewhere, right? That was a really creepy example, Maggie, wasn't it? It's one of many, many different types of ideas. I mean, you're driving down the street. If the police want to pull you over for some reason, click, you know, they can shut your car off. And now it'll stop high-speed chases. So there are benefits to this thing too, right? I mean, I can see the merits of it. Now, the law says that the data is supposed to be protected. But, you know, tell that to your friendly neighborhood hacker, right? Or the law enforcement agency that wants to check where you have been. I said to my producer this morning, Tom, I said, you know how insurance companies are? They're a huge lobby. What if the insurance company somehow is able to get this information? You know, and they say, you know what? Drew Mariani drives just a little too fast. Or he says he's only driving 100 miles a week, and we've noticed he's putting 200 miles on his car. Or, you know, we're going to cap him, or his insurance is going to go up because he's putting more miles. Or, you know, wow, this guy brakes too hard. Or, you know, I'm throwing out hypothetical scenarios. But what if they saw that and they said, this person, we should raise their insurance rates because we don't like the amount of driving they do or how they drive or whatever it may be. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's at least food for thought. And I thought, let's take a look at this because the kill switch is coming to your car in 2026. It's coming to your car. There's going to be one in the car. Brian Kelly joins me. He's an IT security expert with more than 40 years of experience in both government and the private sector. And he's been an advisor to the Department of Defense and the President of the United States. Most recently was chief security officer at Rackspace. It's a global cloud computing network. And I've asked him for his expertise. Brian, thank you for making time with us today. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, hey, Drew, my pleasure. It's great to meet you.
I'm delighted to have you. Let's talk. There's a lot of civil rights stuff here that's, I think, really problematic. But on the security side of the things, right now, regular cars, can they have their systems hacked? And how easy would it be for somebody to take advantage of a car today versus a car with a kill switch in it?
Yeah, well, let me first say I'm embarrassed to admit I wasn't aware of the legislation, but I'm also realistic. I know there's probably many of our congressmen and senators and majority of the general public that doesn't even know that this particular piece of legislation is buried in that bill. Yeah. So that's a frightening thing. And I think in your opening, Drew, you said it well. I mean, there's serious encroachments on civil liberties and, potentially a number of constitutional issues. But I'll put those aside. I mean, I think we realize that. I think from a, to your question specifically, I think from a technology feasibility perspective, I mean, there is serious risk. And I think probably the best example, most recent example, might be the work we've done in this country regarding autonomous vehicles. I know all the large auto manufacturers have taken this very seriously. They've brought in national experts. I know some of them that advise General Motors and others. And yet, you know, when they produce these test vehicles, autonomous vehicles, most of us saw on national news, proof that these vehicles were able to be taken control by, some third party that should never have had access. So, having been in this industry for so long, I'm a little suspicious. I really don't believe there is a 100% foolproof security solution that we can trust that would prevent, would be wrongdoer for, killing somebody's car for whatever nefarious reasons. It is possible. I mean, things we thought were not possible.
Right.
When it happens, you know, we stand back and say, well, how did that ever occur? You know, ransomware cases that we see every day in the last few years is probably an example of that.
That's so true. I say that all the time. It's amazing. What? I never thought I'd see that I now see. You know, defenders of this, though, they're saying that the law requires the data these systems collect, that it's got to be protected. So if that data is protected, it's one thing. But does the presence of a law on a piece of paper in Washington, D.C. mean that the data will be, in fact, protected? Or do you think that's a vulnerability?
And absolutely.
Go ahead. No, you respond, please.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we've already got, the healthcare industry, we've got HIPAA, Healthcare Portability Act legislation. I mean, this legislation exists. And yet the reality on the ground is it still occurs. I mean, these are complex. I'm not criticizing the people that are tasked to kind of secure this data. But these are highly complex environments, highly complex systems. I was involved years ago. I can't disclose all the details, but I was involved in a major, healthcare privacy issue in one of our states. Everybody thought they had done all of the right things. We were compliant with every audit, that was done. And yet there was a significant breach of healthcare information. So, I hate to be the pessimist, bad things are going to happen despite the best of our intentions. I think in this particular scenario, we have to start with the assumption that this kind of kill switch technology, if I can call it that, will be breached. Right. So now we need to think about, what are the scenarios in which that could occur? Could it occur with a moving vehicle, and what are the ramifications?
Right.
Could it occur, with some kind of criminal minded individual, the example you gave, or, somebody coming home late at work. Right. I think it is, security ultimately is risk management. Right. We really need to kind of seriously think about the various risks that present themselves, and then think about the appropriate solutions. And that will be problematic for this, right? Because the risks are there. We can't allow, these legislators that are just, pushing words on paper to just get away with that, right? They need to think about, and then the industry needs to help them understand the serious implications of what they're about to do. And then translate that to what the requisite risks are.
Brian, I hate to interrupt you. Your signal's breaking up a little bit on me. I'll tell you, let me just take a real quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. If you want to join me, feel free to do that. The number is 888-914-9149. You can ask your questions of Brian and join the conversation. If you're just joining us, I stumbled across something that was hidden in a major bill, a law switch to kill all new cars in, 2026, I think the date was. I got to remember what the date was. 2026. I'll tell you more about it when I return.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society. Not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Now.
On Relevant Radio.
Right now.
On Relevant Radio.
Yeah, hey, thanks for joining me. Just a few minutes left. We'll grab a call or two if you want to get in at 888-914-9149. As I said, I often like to keep you up to speed on the most important issues of the day. Yeah, I give you a look at it through hopefully a moral lens. Also, some of these stories that are underreported or not necessarily reported, I stumbled across one that really struck me, and I thought we should talk about it. The headline that grabbed my attention initially was, "Law will install kill switches in all new cars." I said, well, when's that going to be? The year's 2026. Somebody was saying to me back in 1998, X-Files, I don't even remember that series. That was a great series. They had an episode called Kill Switch about AI, gone rogue. What happens here? What's the government going to do? We've talked a little bit about the benefits of of being able to use this to stop somebody fleeing from law enforcement or somebody who's under the influence. There's a lot of merit to being able to stop somebody and keep, you know, the society at large, the community there, safe. But there was an article written by the former U.S. Representative Bob Barr, and he said that hidden away in a recently passed infrastructure bill was something that he warned about. There was a measure to install a vehicle kill switch into every new truck, every new SUV, every new car that is sold in this country. And again, it's not going to be enforced right away. It'll be, you know, several more years before you actually see this. But he pointed out in a bill that it's already been signed into law by President Biden. And they're calling the kill switch a safety device, okay? And it's going to just passively monitor you as the driver. And it will make the decision whether or not you're impaired or whether or not it should be taken off. But the question here is a lot of things. We could talk privacy. We talk safety, a whole lot of things. I also wondered, will there be a back door, right? Will allow police or other government authorities to access it whenever they decide they want to? Do you need a warrant to be able to do that? Can hackers access it, right? Can they get access to your vehicle? Can they, in addition to shutting it down? A lot of different questions. And I've invited, as I said today, somebody who can address these with great eloquence. Brian Kelly joins me. He's an IT security expert. And he's worked as an advisor to the Department of Defense and to the President of the United States. And right now he's Chief Security Officer at Rackspace. And yeah, you worked for the government, Brian. If a government agency wanted to get this data, I'm assuming they could easily do that. I know there are companies also trying to automate vehicles. So, and there's going to be a lot of these vehicles that are going to have this autonomous driving software in it. I would assume there's a kill switch in that too. So is this any different? I don't know. If the country goes this route, what's it mean for freedom of movement? And what are we going to see? I mean, what's the future look like with self-driving cars and kill switches?
Yeah, you know, I think the vision and the reality are two completely different things, right? You know, we can make a strong case, and you gave some examples early on of some of the value and some of the benefits of these things. You know, get a drunk driver, impaired driver off the road. So you can, you know, you can make a wonderful case. But, you know, people need to understand that there are serious risks, not the least of which is the execution by well-intentioned people like the government and corporations. You know, it makes me kind of go back to the, you know, the backdoor yeah. scenario with like an Apple iPhone, for right. example. You know, and those are very thorny issues. When it comes to, you know, obviously the law and our ability to use the back door to get data, yep. you know, with proper warrants and so forth. And every time we've been down that path, it's clumsy. It's fraught with potholes. These are tough issues. So I think you're absolutely right to trigger on this. You know, this is not a slam dunk. The fact that it's signed into law is a bit frightening. Yeah. There really has to be some serious debate on two sides of it. I mean, certainly the civil liberties side really needs to be explored by our scholars in that area. And the technologists kind of really need to dig in. And you know, again, I'm not normally a pessimist, mm-hmm. but I've seen enough that anybody thinks that we can properly secure, you know, all the data, or we can properly secure all the systems, or we can prevent, you know, anybody from accessing, you know, backdoor to a kill switch. Right, right. If we think we can prevent that, I think we're a little bit misguided and need to think more deeply about that.
Yeah, I had somebody just send us a message here, and they said the military uses drones and bombers that could be operated, you know, virtually. They haven't really been hacked. I don't know whether that's true or not, but what's the difference between the technology that they use and the technology that's now going to be going into some of these vehicles?
There's no difference. There really is no difference. It's easy if you're not familiar. You know, it's easy to kind of give the benefit of the doubt. Well, you know, the military must have superior technology, and therefore, you know, a drone won't get hacked. You know, not the case. I mean, we use the same technology. It's, you know, it's the Lockheed Martins and, you know, the General Dynamics and companies like that that are building that technology for us. And their commercial divisions, you know, are using the same designs and the same technology to push out, you know, dishwashers and, you know, washing machines, right? So you know, I mean, I think you're fooling yourself if you think that we have something special in the military that the commercial sector doesn't have. It's fundamentally the same technology. I mean, I spent a brief period of time helping to design and build the Information Warfare Center, included our ability to not only defend, but also to execute offensive operations. And you know, there is a lot that can be done offensively. And I don't think even with our technology today, we're really any better off. I think, we have a little bit better capability today to observe what's happening, you know, through, you know, monitoring type systems, intrusion detection and, you know, various logging and things of that nature. So I think we have better visibility, but that's still a passive kind of activity. Our ability to make sense of what's occurring in a network and respond quickly to kind of minimize damage, that's still a very difficult thing to do. You know, I mean, I've seen it in the corporate environment, right? I mean, you know, I just spent a year, I won't talk about who the client was, but I spent a year on one of the largest ransomware cases in the United States history. And the ransomers were on the network, a major corporation on the network for over 21 days. You know, moving around, gathering data, better understanding the systems, and then on day whatever 22, they drop the ransom. I mean, you think to yourself, how can that happen? You know, a very sophisticated multi-billion-dollar company with all of this technology. It is complex stuff, and it's the things that happen at the margins, right? I got System A and System B, best made in the country, in the world. We're in good shape. Well, it's what happens on the crevice between System A and System B. You know, the hackers are smart. You know, they know how to take advantage of these things. It's not healthy for us to think and kind of just falsely believe that we could build a system such as this, a kill switch in vehicles that would not be able to be attacked or, you know, interfered with any way. I just don't believe it. I've never seen it in 40 years.
I always, if it becomes a reality, which I think it's going to in 2026, I always thought it was going to come anyway when we had these self-driving vehicles, these autonomous vehicles. There would be some way to get into the software and to get the same type of information or to shut it down if authorities needed to. Hey, I want to thank you.
And we've seen multiple examples of that on the autonomous vehicles. I mean, there's been several examples of that. So, I mean, now folks are saying, hey, okay, we got to go back to the drawing board and rethink this.
Hey, Brian.
And now we're starting on another one. So we're going to have to really, hopefully we'll go to the drawing board early and really have these discussions and debates, you know, before we, you know, force these into vehicles, force consumers to pay for them, you know, and hopefully, you know, not having a number of bad accidents or examples before we step back and say, okay, we better revisit the kill switch. Let's do it beforehand, not afterwards.
Brian, thanks. Thanks for being here. I know you are going to be at the same, is it tournament or conference with Matt Dunbar?
Yeah, it's a national tournament. We do a few a year, one in New York in the fall and one in Florida here in January. And then there's a big one out in Vail, Colorado in June. So
that's great. Well, best of luck to both of you.
A couple of us old guys don't want to die quickly. So we're going to keep fighting as long as we can.
You got to stay active. Apparently you are, which is good. I just had a physical today and the doc said the same thing. You got to move. You got to exercise.
Keep moving.
All right. Hey, good luck, guys. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right, Drew.
Thanks. That's Brian Kelly. He's an IT security expert. Just giving us his expertise and insight on a kill switch that's coming to your car in 2026. I'm not being melodramatic. I mean, it's a reality. You're going to see it in those new vehicles. If you want to revisit the conversation, you missed it, feel free to go to relevantradio.com and check out my podcast or wherever else they are. I want to give you a quick programming note. Tomorrow night, I am going to be praying. I'm going to be actually leading the rosary across America. You know, Father Rocky is going to be away from the mic tomorrow. Patrick's going to be sitting in the day. I'll be there on Thursday night and Friday night. So we're going to get a double shot of prayer. Maggie, remind me during the chapel tomorrow to remind people because I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great time. So I'll be doing that with you. And, of course, please pray for us and stay tuned tomorrow. Another great show. Maggie, you have just started Fiat 90. I was reading a little bit about Exodus 90 a couple days ago, and I saw some of my buddies in the network here. They actually shave their heads, right? I'm like, what's going on? Why'd you guys shave your heads?
It's true, yeah.
Tens of thousands of men. Was it Monday or Tuesday? I don't know what date it actually started.
It started Monday.
Monday.
So it's 90 days leading up to Easter.
So that's Exodus 90, right? 90, it's a journey of prayer, fasting, spiritual reading, physical exercise, spiritual discipline, a whole lot of
stuff. No social media.
So you're doing Fiat 90, right? Yeah. I know we only have a minute. We'll have to talk about this in greater detail another day, but...
It's like the sister program to that. It's a little different, though. It's like no excessive purchases, no gossiping, no wearing, try not to wear makeup.
I'm out.
You know, like,
I'm out. No, the female version is a lot different, right?
Yeah.
But we'll talk about it. I want to learn a bit more about it because I see a couple of people here already. It's a tough regimen. But when you come out on the other side, I've heard really wonderful things. Hey, I'm up against the clock. I'm out of time for the day. Cale Clark is coming straight up, so stay tuned for him. Until tomorrow, God bless you.